listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Here goes nothing.
Tune in to KBOO for Drinking from Puddles, hosted by Brandon, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Don't say what you mean. That's Drinking for Puddles every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Yeah.
Hey, yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
If you stop to listen, you can hear their hearts beating loud. Keep those California Indians down.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to American Indian Airwaves. For Marcus Lopez, I'm your host, Larry Smith. On today's program, 52 years, Teatro at Centro, a panel discussion to celebrate the history of Teatro Mestizos and the legacy of Teatro Chicano at El Centro in the traditional territories of the Kumeyaay Nation in San Diego, California. We'll speak with two female instruments of change and their legacy and contributions. All that and more here on American Indian Airwaves.
You can hear when the moon shines bright, the lone fool in the black of the night. You can hear the whisper in the valley. And you know when Kamakani blows to the bahu drum, it's the warriors who are marching down the mountain. Because history ain't no mystery to me.
Today on American Indian Airwaves, we go to the traditional territories of the Kumeyaay Nation in San Diego, California. Marcus Lopez, executive producer of American Indian Airwaves, and myself have the honor and pleasure to speak with two longtime female activists throughout the region, our guests for the hour, Felicitas Nunez of the Salton Sea Coalition and Kathy Requejo, a longtime community activist, now retired. Join us here on American Indian Airwaves to speak about Teatro at Centro, 52 years, a panel discussion to celebrate the history of Teatro Mestizo and the legacy of Teatro Chicano at the El Centro, an event happening October 20th, 2023. And now the interview.
Thank you for joining us on the American Indian Airwaves, Felicita Nunez and Kathy Requejo. Both have experience and originators on the group of the Teatro de las Chicanas, the book that you wrote with the same title. So welcome to the American Indian Airwaves.
Thank you.
All right.
Now on this hour, we're going to talk about the Teatro at Centro and Centro Cultural and celebrating 52 years of its existence in San Diego, California. And they're going to have an activity. It's going to be a panel discussion to celebrate the history of Teatro Mestizo, 1969, and the legacy of Teatro de las Chicanas at El Centro. Before we get into the event, that's going to be October 20th of this year at 6:30, but I wanted to give you a little more background of that event, and you're going to be part of that panel discussions. I know, Kathy, you're not, but Felicitas, you are. So why don't you give us a little background? Could you talk about the group and how you came about? Felicitas, we'll start with you.
All right. We started doing teatro for the students coming in, for they were recruited into the university, and we would pretend I was a counselor, and they were a student, and they were asking questions on how to sign up for classes and what exact major they were into. And then it developed. It was a very active time, and we were also demanding Chicano studies classes. We were demanding Black studies, women's studies, Native American studies at that time in 1968. And then also the Toltecas at the Centro Cultural were mainly community people that wanted to have a say in the artistic cultural value of the indigenous culture. And so we also allied with them to ask funds for the idea of developing a cultural center where we could go and practice and enjoy cultural events and also share it with the whole public. I mean, it's everybody's invited.
Kathy, and you?
Okay, are you talking about the Teatro de las Chicanas?
Yes.
Okay, well, I probably wasn't that involved in the teatro in the beginning because I was one of the students that was recruited into San Diego State University back in the 1970s. But like what Felicitas was saying, during the time of the 1960s was a very active time for the Chicano movement and the women's feminist movement. And so being a local girl from Carpinteria, attending a small high school when I went to the San Diego State, it felt kind of, you know, isolated and alone. And so I got involved with the Chicano movement there and eventually became involved with the Teatro de las Chicanas.
What was the basis of you coming together? It was all women's group, and was that significant, Felicitas?
Yes.
What's so significant about women coming together, the Chicanas coming together?
Basically, we started out with a Chicano movement, and we found a lot of antagonism or men trying to be the dominant factor, and so we were experiencing inequality within our own group because of the male supremacy. So we tried to console ourselves, I guess, and group together as women, and came up with a skit, you know, called Chicana Goes to College, because not only was the male supremacy at the college level, it was also in our homes, a very backward tradition of women being submissive. So we gathered together to invite our mothers, because our mothers were very strong in that it's submissive culture, some of them, and we wanted to tell them that we wanted a change. We wanted to be equal partners in developing our society and making it better, a better world where everybody is considered equal, whether you're white, black, red, woman or man, or whatever in between. Because it was, you know, we felt that this was necessary for the movement to understand the importance of how progress, you know, should happen and not discriminate against each other or other groups.
Now, we know that during that time, during the 60s, you had a situation where, like you said, it was very much a political circumstances arising from that social consciousness rising and the level of going into university and university activism against the Vietnam War and against, like you said, Felicitas, about male supremacy. But yet, when you came, you come up, once you flush that out for our listeners, a lot of the listeners were not even born then, a lot of young people. What was the main challenge then? What did you see as the challengeable elements within your environment?
Well, I have a background as a farm worker. So right away, when Cesar Chavez was leading the farm workers union, I saw it as a challenge, you know, to get into that it was important for anybody to get into the university. Then we had the Vietnam War, where our brothers, uncles, some of our dads, you know, were involved in the Vietnam and were getting killed, maimed, and psychologically traumatized. So that was very strong. We also had the women's movement that we recognized as something important because we were women. We were being discriminated against in within our own group as far as being lesser. So we had a lot of backing that, you know, at that time that we could learn from. And so we, you know, then we started understanding the concept of what working class was, and that means anybody that has to work for somebody else is working class. And so workers are supposed to be treated with respect and have, you know, equal pay for the work that they do, regardless of their sex, and also get paid decent wages and decent conditions.
I also want to just add that during that time, like what Felicitas was saying about the huelgas and stuff, a lot of the triatros during the Chicano movement were starting to be formed. And all these other triatros that were being formed throughout California and in the different universities were all either male orientated and not very many women. And so I think that was one of the other reasons why the Triatro de las Chicanas was formed. We were an all-women's group. We were seen as, you know, rivals between amongst many of these other triatros because we were just a women's group. I mean, we would play male roles in our actos. And so I think that, you know, and the issues that we were raising were similar issues like about huelga, about equality, about bilingual education, regarding women's issues, labor issues, but with a different, you know, twist or a different outcome, because we were doing these actos from a woman's viewpoint.
Larry.
You know, and listening to both of you, and just with some of the other interviews we've had with other indigenous women and talking about colonialism or settler colonialism, you know, and I'm listening to both of you, and as there maybe, I think Marcus was alluding to this, is the idea of the legacy of settler colonialism and, say, Spanish colonialism, and how violent that is in teaching, erasing, but yet in replacing that erasure with patriarchal, you know, values, with male supremacy, as you called it. And I was wondering if maybe you could speak to that more and your experiences at the time.
Okay, most of Mexicans, I believe, are from Mexico, but then we also have roots in the indigenous communities because we're mixed with the invader. and I think that when the invaders came from Europe, they were the sons of the Inquisition, which was against the women in Europe. So when they came to the Americas, they found that a lot of the Native Americans still honored female deities and honored the earth, honored the animal world, the plant world, and so they thought that Christianity would, and they did, you know, they made Christianity the main religion because it was patriarchal. In Christianity, you don't have a female deity or goddess, so we became separated from the earth in so many ways where we don't even today have the respect that we need to have. That's why we're in such a bad space right now with climate change, because the earth was raped over and over, and so were the women, and so were the children of the women. So it's very sad, you know, what happened to the religion that acknowledged both sexes or whatever. It, you know, whether you're gay or whatever, you're Earth. You're from the Earth, and the Earth is our mother. And we have been violating, or we have allowed this violation, or it has been forced on us to not respect the Earth and our nature, our own nature.
Kathy?
Just, you know, that we're stewards of the environment, and the woman has always been the protector of life, of all life, you know, whether it be the animal life or just life in general. And so, and I think that was what, you know, what we're saying is that Christianity was brought down from the Spaniards, and that, you know, ruined, or not ruined everything, but it changed everything. It changed how men viewed women in here, you know, in the Southwest.
I think we were talking about both you and Felicitas and Kathy. You mentioned we talked about the political circumstances, but tell us a little bit more. And I think I want to flush this out. The de las Chicanas were not just a bunch of women coming together and doing their thing, but that you're, what I observed being around the community and the over there in San Diego, in Balboa Park and Centro Cultural, they were talking about a lot of ways in which the notion of comadres, the notion of that intimate spiritual feeling that you have for one another. Talk about how you work with one another. Did you have training? Was there arguments? And I mean, what was the, you know, political discussions? Tell us more about that. Flush that out for us. Tell us that public about you, what you went through.
We were always fighting with each other, that's for sure. But we, you know, we got along. We had our, you know, our actos, and we would fight over which roles we wanted to play. But, you know, we would meet in our homes, practice our skits. We would have our children with us, you know, so we became comadres, you know, to each other. I think most of the women in the Teatro de las Chicanas attended our wedding, and so they're all my comadres, you know, regardless, they're my comadres. Our skits were always political. I mean, they were either about huelgas, they were about labor, about equity, about bilingual education, and about male supremacy. So we would always have a political discussion in the beginning about what the skit was about, and then then we would put forth, you know, we would practice the skit in each other's homes.
Add
Feliz.
So yeah, Kathy, just, you know, just explain that even though, you know, we had differences, we still had a tendency to group together because we felt discriminated against by our own men to some degree. You know, we were just considered like sex objects or disrespected, and that humiliated us, and we had to group together to get our strength back, to get our dignity back, to feel that we had a part in society and we were no less than anybody else.
And we want to remind listeners that KPFK is currently in fund drive mode, and we need your help in financially supporting the work that KPFK and all its volunteer staff and programmers do. We are offering as thank you items Stephen Newcomb's book, Pagans in the Promised Land, Decoding the Doctrine of Christian Discovery, or the DVD based on the book, The Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code, directed by Sheldon Wolfchild and written by Stephen Newcomb. That is also a $100 thank you item. These are both remarkable and phenomenal resources in understanding the settler colonial legacy that begins with religion, that begins with the papal bulls, legal texts that are used by colonial countries to self-legitimize the theft and taking and dispossession of indigenous people's lands. And you can pick up the book, Pagans in the Promised Land, Decoding the Doctrine of Christian Discovery for $100, or you can pick up the DVD, The Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code, also for $100. And you can pick them up by calling 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, or you can visit the kpfk.org website and click on the pledge widget and select those items there. Marcus?
Yes, we want you to support. If you support us and our programming, to phone 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. And supporting not only the American Indian Airways, the wonderful program we have here on KPFK. We also want to mention, Larry, that this book, Pagans in the Promised Land, is significant. If you are indigenous out there, talk about re-indigenizing or talk about decolonization, or if you are our allies out there that support all the different struggles that we have, interview the frontline fighters, and we want to continue the programming, please, this particular book and the DVD is offering to you as a thank you note from us to you. And this is the people that are really in this struggle. This book is important because when I was in New York, Larry, you know, some of the leaders like Orrin Lyons or Chris Peters and whatnot, they were saying that if we knew this book 50 years ago, we wouldn't have to go through all this rigmarole of what we went through. Not that they want to apologize, but this is a book that explains it all, Larry.
Marcus, we want to go back to our interview just to showcase and feature the work that we do here on American Indian Airwaves. And if you appreciate the work that we do here on American Indian Airwaves and KPFK in general, please pick up the book or the DVD for $100 each as a way to show your support. And Marcus, could you reintroduce our guest for the hour?
Yes, the guests for the hour is Felicita Nunez and Kathy Requejo. Both, you're talking about the Teatro Centro down San Diego, California, Centro Cultural, and as far as the panel discussion to celebrate the history of the Teatro Mestizo, Teatro de las Chicanas, and all that means the panel discussion. Really some 52 years of the center in San Diego and by over there Chicano Park, and all that goes with it in order to explain, to articulate, and to showcase the phenomenal work that El Centro is doing there in San Diego. Well, viewing that history, read the book that you wrote, Teatro de las Chicanas, I got a sense that you were just not only talking about the local and regional, you know, aspects of a community, whether it be San Diego or Southern California, but with Tenaz and with many of the teatro groups in Mexico, and as well as, you know, Teatro de la Esperanza, Teatro de los Campesinos, and other major teatro groups, the Teatro de los Chicanos, and the, your the storytelling and the resistance that you played had a significant impact on the Chicano movement as a whole. Do you think not? And tell us about your impact of the Chicano movement as we know of it today.
Well, I do believe, you know, we still have it. It's very strong in some areas, you know, to be accepted as equals. But I think that we did have some kind of impact. We were not famous. We were infamous. So it, you know, we did have the kind of a reputation for speaking out and demanding our right to be recognized as humans. And also, you know, the Chicano movement was very, to some extent, extreme cultural nationalist. So, you know, they had this idea that we were their women. And as their women, we were not supposed to date outside the group. You know, like, you don't date a black guy, you don't date a white guy, you don't any other color, you know, you had to remain in that culture. They, like, we were their property, and we rebelled against that. We said we have a choice, and we will go with whoever we we love, regardless of sex or color or nationality. So that was very blatant, you know, and that's where, you know, I'm saying, you know, that I think we were more infamous than respectfully recognized, and to some degree, you know, we still do have an impact when we speak to the younger generation, especially that we have an open avenue, and we still have continued to do panel discussions and you know, the conferences that women have, like women in literature and social change, Mujeres en Letras y Cambio Social. We've been, as a group, also attending these conferences where you have the very young women coming into the college setting, and it's so it's such an honor for us to share our experiences. And it's still very, very strong how they connect with us, you know, because they've been going through some of the same discrimination within the tradition or the culture that's very backward.
Kathy?
Yes. I hope, you know, that we had an impact and that we have an impact still today, because I think our message in the book is the same, is the message that the young people can grasp. Not too long ago, my son Marcus Jr. Was up at UCSB with some of his students, and they were in the library, and he called me and he said, guess where we're at? We're in the library at UC Santa Barbara, and guess what I found? I said, what did you find? He says, your book, The Triatlo de las Chicanas, and he pulled it out and he sent me a picture with his students, and I just felt so proud that we've been able to have some kind of an impact, and that somebody would pick up the book there and read it. And like Felix is saying, is that even today, the book was written, what, how many years ago, Felix?
2008 it was published.
2008. So even today, some of the members of the Triatlo still go around to the different colleges and the universities and have panel discussions. And I know that next week or this coming weekend, they're on a panel up at, where is it at,
Dartmouth, New Hampshire.
Yeah, in New Hampshire, for a panel discussion. And so the book is still being used today, and that makes me very proud, you know, that we were able to write something like that, because every woman that is in that book that wrote their story was speaking from the heart of their trials and tribulations of going to school, the struggles that they had going to the universities, and how our group, the Triatlo, brought us together like a family. And I think that I wrote there, it's like an umbilical cord that ties us together, and that's why we call each other the Las Comadres.
Right. Well, I'd like to just tell let the listeners know that Felicita Nunez is for more than 52 years, and that been involved very much in issues, not only with the in the past at Triatlo de las Chicanas, but education, bilingual education, issues of the border, and issues of challenging the role of women, and as far as not only equality, but women's role in history, women's role in education, women's role in politics, like women's role within many facets of our community, very much involved with the community. And Kathy Raquel is very much involved with the CWA, and then very much of a union organizer and a past president of region of the CWA and supporter of UAW, even the strike now. Well, you can see that these women, along with Laura Garcia and some other people, Laura Garcia was editor and participation, and then Tribuna del Pueblo, a national newspaper, newspaper. And we can see that this is the basis of Triatlo de las Chicanas developed a sense of leadership with all the different women that were participating in that, and just surrounding that, and that this particular organization, this particular group, really grew by leaps and bounds in the sense of the spirit of other women taking over, other younger women listening to him. Now, the question I have for you, both Felicitas and Kathy, was the sense that when you look at this and you're in your audience, and I want the listeners to really listen to you, what was the role of the audience? Because it wasn't just like Broadway, or it wasn't just like, you know, like in Hollywood. It was very much grassroots, and very much you performed in front of audiences, whether it be farm workers, whether it be janitors, whether it be teachers, or whether it be community organizers, whether it be, you know, bottles in the street, you know, and lowriders, or whatever the case might be. But you were there. Tell us about the interaction with the with your audience and people that you have interaction with. Felicitas, we'll start with you.
Okay, well, not all of them were positive, but our acting was a message to the community, whatever it represented, to for them to become aware. And with that awareness and that education, for the audience to take on responsibility for their wherever they came from, their locale. And that was the kind of message that, you know, for people to get more involved in the outer world besides just, bringing up children, for example, and making sure they have clean clothes and decent food. You know, that apart from that, that these children are going to go out into society. And what kind of educational system, judicial system they're going to get involved with, what are their, you know, we throw them out into the world. And so you want to know what the outside world is like. You know, do you just breed children so that they can go to war? Or do you breed, or do you have children and raise them to be aware and educated about their surrounding and what their importance in society and as productive people? So that's what we wanted the audience to grasp in the messages that we would put out, to be supportive of the labor movement, to be supportive of the education system, to make it better, to develop better working conditions, housing conditions, and just, you know, just for them to be active in their world, in our world.
Kathy.
Yeah, I think that not all of our audiences were responsive, had a positive response, but the small audiences that we had, the message would always be directed to whatever their issue was, whether it was education or whether it was a labor issue. Because some of the audiences that we had saw us as nothing but a bunch of lesbians, you know, a bunch of, I don't want to say the word because it's bad, P-U-T-A-S, no sabe nada women, you know. So we had the good and we had the bad. But the message that we tried to deliver in our skits always was related to whatever that issue was of that community.
Yeah.
And then you had different skits along the way. Like I remember the one about Vietnam, and your audience might not, you know, that was very volatile, you know, as far as supporting and not supporting. A lot of the, you know, fathers and mothers had their boys over there in Vietnam getting killed, and you brought this issue up. So it was a time where you brought up issues that were really controversial. Talk about that for us.
Yes, that was, you know, like when we were protesting the Vietnam War, I went home, and out of my four brothers, three of them went to the war, okay, or signed up for the military. And part of the reason, you know, that I had to explain to them is it wasn't not that I was disrespecting them. It was that I didn't believe that the wars that were being taken on were what were we doing over there killing Vietnamese, you know, for example? What did they do to us? And who was running the show? And so it was difficult because my family, you know, well, three out of my four brothers went to war because also there was no jobs. They didn't, you know, we couldn't aspire to go to a university because we didn't have the income. The reason some of us got into college was because of Johnson's war against poverty. That's been the best war ever, war against poverty. And so it was hard, you know, trying to communicate with my brother, especially the oldest one, that it wasn't out of disrespect that I was against them going to war. It was out of a lack of awareness and reasoning as to why we do the things we do and why we get into situations where we go and kill other people, and we don't really understand what it's about and who's really pulling the strings and why. Why are we doing it?
Kathy?
Another issue would be the like the male supremacy or just the culture in the young women who are going to college. During that time, I think things are a lot better now than they were back in the 1960s, but the struggle between the parents allowing or letting their daughters go to college, you know, there was a struggle there, a fight there. Again, it was, we would do a skit on, you know, going to college, getting that word out of the importance of going to college to help these mothers and to help these fathers understand why it was so important to allow your daughters to go to school or allow your children to go to school in order to get a higher education to be able to, you know, improve their standard of living. But that message was the message that we try to send out.
You're listening to the American Indian Airways. We just had a great discussion with Felicita Nunez and Cato Requejo concerning a celebration in Teatro Centro down in San Diego, Centro Cultural, at October 20th, 2023 at 6:30 p.m. They're going to talk about Teatro Mestizo, Teatro Las Chicanas, and a lot more. And within this programming, we want to also, if you like the programming here at American Indian Airways, please are asking for you to go and put your wallet with your ear is on and support KPFK by this $100 Pagans in the Promised Land is our gift to you, and also the $100 donation to Doctor and Discovery. And these particular gifts are we're offering to you here on the American Indian Airways for listening to our program.
And Marcus, we want to remind listeners they can call 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, or visit the kpfk.org website. Click on the KPFK widget. And just to give our listeners a teaser of what's on the DVD, The Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code, we're going to play you a short snippet.
Organic Laws.
So when we take the history of these documents that I'm talking about, the papal documents, and we look at how they influence and inform U.S. law, then it's fascinating. There's a book from 1877 called Federal and State Constitutions, Colonial Charters, and Other Organic Laws of the United States. And in that book, it takes each and every one of the states existing in 1877. By the way, the book was published by the U.S. Government Printing Office. But it takes each of those states and it traces the originating documents back to their earliest origins. So in the case of Florida, as an example, the originating documents for the current state of Florida are the prerogatives granted to Columbus by the King and Queen of Spain in 1492 and the Papal Bull of 1493. Only in Latin, by the way. It's not even published in English in that book. And then when you trace that forward, what you find is that all of the states in the South and the Southwest, such as Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, Nevada, Utah, Colorado, Idaho, sections of Idaho, they trace back to that same origin. Anywhere that the Spanish Crown claimed rights of discovery and domination from the earliest times, that still continues to today. And the United States is considered to be the successor country to the prerogatives granted to Columbus and to the Papal Bull of 1493. So that's the actual organic law of the United States in those areas. But it is even more extensive than that, because it turns out that because Spain had possession of what was called the Louisiana Purchase Territory, the Louisiana Colony, from the period of around 1763 until 1803, that Spanish crown law also is considered to be part of the organic law of the entire Louisiana Purchase Territory.
And you're listening to a snippet of the DVD, The Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code, directed by Sheldon Wolfchild and written by Stephen Newcomb. It is one of two thank you items that are each $100 for supporting us here on KPFK. Again, you can pick up the book, Pagans in the Promised Land, Decoding the Doctrine of Christian Discovery, or the documentary, The Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code. Each are $100, and you can pick them up by calling 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, or visiting the kpfk.org website, clicking on the pledge widget, and selecting those thank you items there. And Marcus, we're going to go back to our interview, and who are we listening to?
Larry, we're listening to Felicita Nunez and Kathy Requejo, and we're talking about the Teatro groups during the 60s, and they're going to have a celebration 52 years with the Teatro Mestizo and other individuals, panel discussion on Teatro at Centro Cultural, celebrating 52 years over there October 20th at 6:30 p.m. over there by Ballpark. A lot of indigenous activity there through the years, Larry. Besides the real critical issues at the time, what were some of the things that you really gravitated to you as far as your performances? What stuck in your mind that you want to share about, that you're really proud of? We'll go with Kathy first.
Just performing like in front of the universities, the colleges, and remembering the clapping, you know, the Chicano clap at the end. That was just, it just kind of like, wow, you know. And then afterwards, you know, after the book was written, we went on, most of us went on book tours to the different colleges and the universities, just being able to get up in front of the audiences again, not doing a skit, but as individuals, explaining, you know, explaining why the book was written and for who the book was written for the youth, to help them when they, you know, when they went to school. But that's what I'm most proud of, being able to be part of that.
Yeah, and I think I'm proud of the fact that some of us were very shy. And doing theater is probably even more than speech, taking a class in speech, because when you're doing theater, it's very emotional, and it's body movement, it's consciousness, it's your philosophy, it's you're expressing a view that is not told this is the way you do it, but this is what you believe in. And I was proud of the fact that the young women that got involved with teatro at first, you know, it was a struggle because they were very shy and still had this like thing, well, I'm nobody. Even to write the book, they said, who wants to hear our story? That was within our group still, you know, after we had been performing and everything else. They didn't want to write their story, and I said, it is important, write your story. And we found out that in writing your story, it was there was a lot of healing going on, because at that time in our day, we didn't talk about how we had been sexually abused. And in the book, you know, when we're writing the book, all of this came out. So there was a lot of tears and releasing of, because in our day, we didn't talk about those things, you know, as freely as they are spoken about today, like the Me Too movement, for example. You didn't talk like that because they would always say, well, it's your fault.
Look at the way you're dressed. Look at the way you walk. Look at the way you bat your eyes or whatever, you know. They would downgrade you completely for complaining against sexual abuse. And we learn to speak up about those situations, and we learn to verbalize. We learn to express our thoughts, our views. Some of, maybe they were incorrect or whatever, but, you know, your voice was developed through the acting and then later through the writing of the book.
Well, we want to thank you very much, Felicita Nunez and Katia Requejo, for talking about, you could hear more of their experiences with other people. We didn't get a hold of people from Teatro Mestizo, but other people that are going to be there, Memo Mendez, and other individuals, Carolina Flores, and moderated by Jay Powers and Sotomayor. And so this 52 years is a long time for you to continue doing the struggle, to celebrating it, to realizing what's going on. And, you know, we're talking about Teatro at Centro Cultural over there in San Diego, and the book, Teatro Las Chicanas. We want to thank you very much, Felicita and Kathy, for our discussion here at the American Indian Airwaves.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to the American Indian Airwaves, and we had an interview with a lot of players back in the 60s, Las Chicanas. They wrote a book on Teatro Las Chicanas. But yet, if you like our interviews, and we do here on the American Indian Airways, whether it be Steve Newcomb, whether it be these different frontline fighters with indigenous peoples, please support us. And all we're asking for is phoning this number, 818-985-5735, and that's 818-985-5735, or go to kpfk.org. Look at the items they have for pledging, for our gifts to you, to support programs here on KPFK and especially the American Indian Airwaves. Larry.
And Marcus, thank you, Marcus. We want to remind listeners that you can pick up the book, Pagans in the Promised Land, Decoding the Doctrine of Discovery. It's a $100 thank you item. Or you can pick up the DVD, The Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code, directed by Sheldon Wolfchild and written by Stephen Newcomb. That's a $100 thank you item. And both of these premium items are crucial to understanding the living histories of settler colonialism and its impact on indigenous peoples, and how the papal bulls, right, the Doctrine of Discovery or the Doctrine of the Dominion Code, is codified or part of America's legal system as a way to maintain a permanence of dispossessing indigenous peoples and their respective First Nations of their lands, their traditional homelands. If you appreciate what we do here on American Indian Airwaves, again, you can pick up the book, Pagans in the Promised Land, Decoding the Doctrine of Christian Discovery, for $100, or the DVD, The Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code, directed by Sheldon Wolfchild and written by Stephen Newcomb. That is a $100 thank you item. You can call 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, or you can visit the kpfk.org website, click on the pledge widget, and select either one of those premium items for $100 each, or one for just $100, or another premium item for the dollar amount listed on the kpfk.org website. Marcus?
Yes, thank you. I want to thank our listeners out there. You know, whether you pledge $25 or $5,000, you know, if you're coming to that kind of money, you know, please consider phoning KPFK, this number, 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Give us a hand. We're asking you for support. We're asking you for help us. So you indigenous peoples out there, give us a hand, whether it be organization, church group, or political organization, give us a hand here on the American Indian Airways. Thank you very much, listeners.
And we're going to play another snippet from the documentary that's directed by Sheldon Wolfchild, written by Stephen Newcomb. Again, the DVD or the documentary is titled The Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code. You can pick it up for $100. Call 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, or visit the kpfk.org website and click on the pledge widget. Pick up the book or the DVD, each for $100. And now we're going to play you another snippet from the DVD, The Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code.
Reaffirming the Doctrine of Discovery.
In August of 1935, a commission was established by Congress by joint resolution. The commission was established to commemorate and celebrate the 150th anniversary of the United States Constitution. As a result of that commission's work, a book was published in 1937 entitled The Story of the Constitution. And it was primarily authored by Saul Bloom, a New York congressman. In the opening of that particular book, we find Part 1, Origin of the United States, Chapter 1, Discovery, Title to the Soil. And it says, King Henry VII of England turned a cold shoulder upon Christopher Columbus when he asked for financial aid in undertaking a highly speculative voyage in search of India by sailing westward from Europe. But Henry VII, a keen and enterprising monarch, quickly realized the importance of Columbus's discovery, and in 1496 commissioned John Cabot to go out and discover countries then unknown to Christian people and take possession of them in the name of the English king. According to the book, Cabot made two voyages and by 1498 had sailed along what is now the coast of the United States and claimed it for England. By tacit agreement, the European sovereigns rested their respective claims upon priority of discovery. The natives were regarded as heathens, possessing no rights of sovereignty. So here you have the acknowledgement by the United States government and a commission that was chaired by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, acknowledging the right of discovery that Chief Justice Marshall said in Johnson versus McIntosh in 1823 was confined to countries then unknown to Christian people, which means the countries that were inhabited by unbaptized nations and peoples of the planet.
Genocide and the effects of intergenerational trauma.
According to Sherburne Cook and Woodrow Bora, the Mexican native population was reduced from about 25.2 million in 1518 to 1.37 million in 1595. What I found in my research is one of the reasons, for example, for the many suicides and for many depression, is that element of we used to live here and suddenly this is not ours, suddenly our religious beliefs are stupid and false, an invasion by a guy called the devil, Satan, and everything we have believed and done is mistaken. From now on they are our owners, and they tell us how to live. There are testimonies of extreme depression that will go either through the way of suicide or desperate
infanticide. Yes.
Desperate insurrection.
Yes.
Kill me, but I am not going to live this way. But that absolute devaluation,
yes,
of one's being,
yes,
and one history. There is a Franciscan in Mexico in the middle of the 16th century Bernardino Sahagún. He wanted to write a history of the customs and ideas and cultures and religiosity of the Mexican Native Americans. And he begins to ask the old people, the ancianos, the elders, who still have the memory. And then the elders tell Sahagún how it was. And at one moment, Sahagún has a brief section in the middle of the book saying, "Oh my God, what have we done?" When he discovered that there was there a civilization, and there was art, there was culture, there were deeds of strength and resistance and dignity, and suddenly, what have we done to these people?
We maintain that the principle declared in the 15th century as the law of Christendom, that discovery gave title to assert sovereignty over and to govern the unconverted, has been recognized as part of the national law, the law of nations for nearly four centuries, and that it is now recognized by every Christian power in its political department and its judicial.
If they refuse to merge into and become part of the superior race, they must necessarily be destroyed. It is a law of humanity.
Now, I think of this Western Hemisphere, all of it, as the domain of, as Churchill described it, from this hemisphere, Western Christendom. The foundation of Western civilization, Judeo-Christianity, the values that come from the Old and New Testament, the values that Christopher Columbus brought here across the ocean, and that great footprint of the moral values and the ethics that are emerged as part of our Old Testament values, our New Testament values, the idea of the Protestant work ethic and turning the other cheek and building a civilization, a society to provide the best opportunity for salvation, to glorify God and our country, and understand, as our founding fathers understood, that our rights do come from God, and to promote that, the full-throated Americanism as the leaders of the free world, of Western Christendom, has not been asserted strongly enough in this hemisphere, and is certainly not strong enough in other hemispheres, Mr. Speaker.
The moment of silence is over.
And that was excerpts from the documentary, The Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code, a $100 thank you item for supporting us here on KPFK. And that concludes our show for today here on American Indian Airwaves. A special thank you to our guests for the hour, Felicitas Nunez and Kathy Requejo. A special thank you to our musical guest, Aragon Star, Koopa Aina, and the band Blackfire. Support KPFK. Pick up the book, Pagans in the Promised Land, Decoding the Doctrine of Christian Discovery by Stephen Newcomb for $100, or the documentary, The Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code, by calling 818-985-KPFK or visit the kpfk.org website and click on the pledge widget and select those premium items there. American Indian Airwaves is mixed and mastered in the studios of Burnt Swamp Studios in Signal Hill, California. For Marcus Lopez, I've been your host for the hour, Larry Smith. Until next time.
For the hands that hold the chains.
rage against our fears. Try not to become what we've endured. Wearing our souls on a thread. The moment of silence is over.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM, and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top
when
of our
the farmer lines. Comes to town with his wagon broken down. The
farmer. Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on K-B-O-O Portland.
Portland.
Listen, laugh, learn.
The farmer is the